Hello, welcome to Snacks and Chats. We've got a special guest, David Dallas.
Whoa. Hello.
Whoa.
Whoa.
It was real hard to get this guy.
Super hard.
He hates podcasts.
Yep.
Great to have you. When I asked him what we should name this podcast, he said, call it Fuck Podcasts.
Bit of a jokester.
Went with Snacks and Chats instead.
He didn't really like that name either, did he?
Didn't really like that name either.
I thought it was funny. I thought it was very basic. It's the second time you've named something that I was like, are you going to just laugh at?
Yeah, the other thing, I called my website Lani Says and he laughed at that too.
Yeah, so. I'm super supportive.
All right, so let's just get into it. When people ask you where you're from, what do you tell them?
Depends who's asking, I guess. If I'm overseas or something, I'll just say New Zealand. If it's more a question of, like, what are you, like, which kind of more what you get here, then I'd just say Samoan or, like, Afakasi, half Samoan.
Samoan, Afakasi, South Auckland, all of that is, like, has been throughout your music from the start. Do you think your appearance and your heritage, has that sort of favoured you in terms of how you've been received with your music?
Are you talking about, because some people think I just look white?
Yeah, there's that. There's that for starters.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, I'm sure it helps, you know, I'm sure that helps somewhere, like with certain demographics. Do you know what I mean? I guess it's just one of those things. Like, I'm sure there's people who, they might not even subconsciously realize it, but they'll be like, oh, that guy looks more like me, so I'm into his music, you know?
Mm.
I definitely think being Afrikasi, being half white and half Samoan, has made it more people could relate to my music, because I feel like I've got an understanding of both worlds.
You seem to walk the line between the two worlds pretty well, but do you feel that in terms of acceptance?
I don't think I consciously examine it, but I know that, like, say when I first came out, like when I came out on Not Many or something, I had, like, people that thought I was from Christchurch, you know? Like, they're like, oh yeah, that white dude from Christchurch, he's mean, you know? And I think probably when I came through on that, there was probably heaps of, like, Pacific Islanders and Samoans and stuff that would have had no idea that I was Samoan. Maybe somewhere subconsciously there is, like, a thing where I'm like, I need to put things that reference who I am and where I'm from in there so that those people can understand as well. I guess because I've been making music so long now, I feel like everyone knows, you know? The people that are listening know.
What about in America? How did that sort of identity, we're used to like Afakasis or half castes or whatever, we know about Pacific Islanders and we know that that's not white.
Mm.
Did you come up against any of that in the US?
I mean, outside of New Zealand, like in America especially, they were just like, oh, you're a white rapper, you know? Especially when I first got over there, they would just chuck me in the frame with white college frat rap. Like, a lot of which that scene I had no idea about, you know, like, they'd put me in there with, oh, you're like Mac Miller or something like that. And it's like Mac Miller, he was like the big guy of that scene. Like, there's hundreds of others. To me, that's a trip because I'm like, musically, I was like nothing like these guys. And obviously, my culture and my heritage is nothing like that. You try to explain that to them, but they kind of don't get their head around it a lot of the time. It's like, oh, where are you from? Because, you know, obviously where I'm from New Zealand. You know,
yeah.
I'm born in New Zealand. I'm from New Zealand, but half Samoan. So it's like, Not all Americans, but there's a lot of Americans who have, you know, their grasp of geography is not necessarily huge. And it's like, I remember I went to a gym in New York when I first got there, when me and Pete first got there, went to sign up. Chick's like, oh, where are you from? I was like, oh, I'm from New Zealand. And she's like, oh, wow, I was just talking to someone from Scotland.
You know? You're like,
and
cool.
I was like, okay. You know, where do you go from there? You know, trying to explain that sort of thing was kind of difficult because they'd be like, oh, well, what are New Zealanders? And I was like, well, I'm a New Zealander, but I'm half white. Like, I'm half, like, European, half Samoan. And they're like, oh, so your dad is from Europe. And I'm like, well,
no,
I guess his ancestors were, but he's born in Otago, you know? With Samoans, I'd just be like, oh, you know, Troy Polamalu plays, you know, who plays NFL. Like, just point to NFL players and they get it. They're like, oh, y'all are some big motherfuckers, you know? Like,
yeah.
That was kind of the reference point.
Growing up, did you ever feel disconnected at all from either culture, like Samoan or...
Oh, yeah, for Whanau? Sure. No, yeah. For sure. Like, I felt disconnected probably from both a bit. Not so much, obviously, because of the way I look. I feel like it's different now. There's so many more half caste kids now. Mm. There's so many more half poly kids. But I can remember even in primary school, there was like one other Samoan girl in my class. And that's a primary school in South Auckland, you know?
That's Papatoa Primary.
Yeah, Papatoa East. There was like one other Samoan girl.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's buzzy to
which
think of.
Which is crazy
now.
They're like, that would never happen now. You know, by the time I was in like intermediate in high school, there was heaps of us. But I was disconnected in the sense that because all my siblings are born in Samoa, my brother closest to me, he's deaf, so he can't speak. But my older brother and sister, you know, they were born in Samoa. They can speak Samoan fluently, have a real strong grasp of the culture. And because my parents split when I was young, I pretty much grew up in a very Samoan household. Like, you know, my Samoan extended family is super close to me. But I didn't have the same grasp of the language as my siblings do, and I didn't grow up there either. It's just kind of different for me, you know. And I was, when I first started school, there's not that many Samoans around.
I guess when your older siblings can do, say, like the traditional stuff, then they just always get called on to continue doing that. And I guess
you're totally. Just
sort of left.
So any life I love, love stuff, they'll take care of it. You know, any time that sort of stuff is called on, I can just kind of lean on them. And because they're so much older than I am, I was pretty much raised by my older brother and sister. So. Mm. They just handle biz as far as that sort of stuff goes. So I was kind of left to my own devices most of the time in terms of identity, like find what mine is.
South Auckland is an identity in itself as well, right? Do you feel that way?
Yeah. No, yeah. That is. That is my identity, really. Like, I'm a half-caste dude from Papatoa, from South Auckland. You know, even when I look at my family, like I'm a first generation because my parents went from there, my siblings weren't born there. It's just me. So that fully shapes my identity.
Because, yeah, you said your dad's from Otago, but that's not really something you looked into maybe later on in life?
I think a lot of that is because my parents split when I was super young. I mean, even to this day, I don't even know how my parents were together. It blows my mind. they're such different personalities. It just kind of blows my mind. My dad is from Alexandria in central Otago, and when he finished school, he did like an apprenticeship and he ended up going to work as a mechanic for Polynesian Airlines in Samoa. So that's obviously how him and my mum met. As far as like my dad's side of the family, because my parents split when I was young, you know, my dad lived in what's now Albany, but through the like 90s and stuff, Albany wasn't,
it wasn't
as easily connected as here. Yeah. It was like Albany's fucking miles away.
It was
like
rural.
Yeah. And so my dad had a farm in Albany. For a kid that grows up in South Auckland and your old man's like a white dude that's got a farm in Albany is fucking very different, you know? So,
I just wanted to hang out in South Auckland.
It was just kind of like any other kid. It wasn't like I wanted to be in South Auckland. Mm. It's just the fact that you just hang out with your mates.
Just do
regular shit there. So a lot of that sort of stuff I couldn't relate to. And my dad wasn't, I don't know if that's just like a European thing or something, like, it wasn't like a super always, these are your cousins, you know, this is your family coming over. Like, I hadn't met like most of my dad's side of the family until much later. So kind of the only family I kind of knew was my Samoan side.
In terms of speaking the language, you can understand it though, right? Like
because my mum spoke Samoan to me always.
Yeah. Yelled Samoan to you.
Yeah. I'm just pretty mud when it comes to like trying to put it in sentences and you know, but as far as like, yeah, just general conversation, I've always got enough Samoan I can pick up whatever's going on.
And you want to change that?
Yeah, well, have you talked about it on here before?
Nah.
Are we talk-
so oh yeah, by the way, anyone listening who doesn't know this is my husband.
Yeah.
So this is a bit weird, interviewing your husband. And
the chemistry is crazy.
Interview might be a bit disjointed because I'm kind of like sitting here like, why are you asking this? You already know.
And just to show how even way smaller New Zealanders, Ben has engineered your last two albums?
He's recorded them and he mixed the most recent one.
Yeah.
So I'm like, he knows, you kind of know everything.
I know
anyway.
This, yeah.
He knows, yeah.
So we kind of just, yeah. This is fucking, this is what I'm talking about, podcast, man. It's fucking, it's Hollywood. It's bullshit, man.
It's for you, the listener, not for us. Yeah. We already know.
You're welcome.
But yeah, so we went to Samoa language classes together.
Yep.
And were you surprised at how little I knew? Or were you
I knew that you knew nothing. I didn't know that you knew nothing.
Did you think that you knew, were you surprised at how much you knew?
I wasn't surprised at how much I knew. I was surprised at how difficult grammatical things were.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was more that, because it would just be like, you know, she pointed to these things and it's like I knew the words. But when it came to like putting it in a sentence, I'm like, oh, just, you know, I put the wrong prefix and I just put them, you know, just putting things wrong. And also the tough thing was I've only heard colloquial Samoan, you know, so everything from my family and my mum is all pronounced with a K. And then, you know, you go to that class and it's proper Samoan, so it's all T's, and it was weird. You know, she'd always like kind of call me out. She's like, no, pronounce it properly.
That's what most people had trouble with, I think. Hey, just, I guess you'd call proper English, so I guess, yeah, proper Samoan.
Yeah, it's just converting it.
Are you going to do more lessons?
Yeah, I'd like to.
Are you?
I feel like I have to retake the intro course because, yeah, our knowledge, mine was absolutely nothing. I realized even just with Dave and my sister and even the rest of the students, everyone had a base there and I had no base. So I feel like I'm going to need to do the intro class again. But Dave can probably move on to the next one.
I'd like to have like a really solid grasp of it. Just, it's one of those things, you know, like even as your parents' age and stuff, I'm like, I'd hate for like my mum to pass away and I can't fully speak the language, you know?
Yeah. And she's right, literally right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got someone that I can speak to in Samoan all the time, you know, so I need to use it while it's still there.
It's funny imagining you in high school, I think, because you weren't, would you have classed yourself as like a little bit of a misfit or an outsider or whatever?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I definitely felt like a outsider.
I know that when you started getting a little bit of fame, it was really surprising to your classmates that you were a rapper.
They had no idea.
Like, no idea.
Yeah, because I had like long hair and stuff. Not because I wanted to have long hair, just because I just never got it cut.
Couldn't be fucked.
Yeah.
I didn't have like a, obviously I didn't have a rapper per se image, but people who knew, there's a couple like girls who were like into rap the same way that I was. People who knew. But you know, you gotta understand, like at that time, especially among the like islander community, being into rap was just, you liked Tupac and Bone. Like everyone in my
school,
that was everyone in my school, you know, everyone in my school just liked Tupac and Bone. And I was like, in terms of like my fandom for rap music, I was going in, you know.
You went deeper than that.
I was going in, like, you know, I liked that stuff too, but it's almost like I didn't want to be seen liking that stuff because I wanted to like shit that you weren't listening, you know. Like, I was like,
so what,
I try and tell people about Mobb Deep, and I remember telling some of my friends about like Wu-Tang prior to like Wu-Tang Forever and stuff like that, and you know, they were like, shit, like, you know, then when everyone started drawing Wu-Tang shit on their books, they're like, fuck, gee, you were up on it, bro. So, yeah, I really used to study this shit. And it was, I've said it in interviews before, but it's pretty much, I pretty much have Max TV to thank for that. The True School Hip Hop show on Max TV. And it used to be hosted by Severe and DLT. And the odd times my mate Daniel would bring the source to school, be like, oh, shit. You know, you'd look through it and find out about stuff. But in those days, it was like, because, I mean, the internet was there, but it wasn't shit. Like, I can remember going on the internet on the Loud Records website and like watching a 10-second clip of Mobb Deep Give Up the Goods video just in fucking 124x10 resolution. The worst resolution ever, and like telling my friend to like download it and stuff. But that was it, because I mean the radio still, like I still listen to like My FM and stuff like that then, and they played like all the cool R&B stuff and like the commercial rap stuff, whatever commercial rap stuff there was, like maybe some Naughty by Nature and Bone or stuff. Outside of that, the only real connection I had to find out about anything else was the music videos that were on Max TV. And it was massive for me, man. Like, it's like I used to watch it every week and like record any videos that I didn't already, you know, because they had a limited selection of videos, so I'd record whatever ones I didn't already have. and just play that show on the VCR over and over. Because I didn't even buy albums and shit then. I didn't have no money to buy albums. Like I'd get, that was when you used to get like 2 albums a year for like your birthday and Christmas or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you'd thrash them. So yeah, I kind of credit that with me finding my passion for like hip hop music and just, yeah, I was just basically a nerd for it.
Mm.
I really nerded out. I'd watch the videos and used to have to try and connect who was who, you know, like I can remember seeing like Diddy before he became like Diddy, you know, before Biggie died and stuff. You know, he'd be in the Lil' Kim video and then he's in the Biggie video and then he pops up.
So you'd know all the producers and shit.
I didn't even know about production. Yeah, like exactly. I was just like, who's this guy? Yeah. Like this guy looks, you know, like.
Why does he keep popping up?
Why does he keep popping up in the different videos, you know, like, and then he shows up in the Mobb Deep Survival of the Fittest video.
Yeah,
and then like Mobb Deep and Nas are in the same video, like all that sort of shit used to just.
Yeah, and like you say, I was so into internet to connect to work it out.
Yeah. Yeah, so I can just remember like watching all that stuff and then talking to my mates at school about it. Like, and then we'd get the Source magazine. And be, oh, this is that guy, you know, like trying to connect the dots. It was fun.
You were also, I mean, you talk about being a nerd for it, but you're also like an actual nerd as well,
like a computer
in terms
nerd.
Of like a computer nerd and that sort of thing. Totally. You did a computer science degree and stuff, and that was big for the local hip-hop scene, right? Like knowing your way around software and internet forums and all that kind of stuff. Like,
well, I mean,
that helped you for the in terms of the local scene.
Yeah, in that early era through the first half of the 2000s, pretty much the whole local scene that you of artists that you've seen to come up that people know now, everyone was on. There was like a handful of like New Zealand hip-hop forums. It was basically like Funk Republic, and there was another one, Hip-Hop NZ. Hip-Hop NZ was kind of my era of it. There'd be everyone from like Mareko, P Money.
Yeah,
everyone would like comment on this thing. It was a real tight-knit scene, and like people would post music and stuff like that. But even prior to that, I used to go onto like American hip-hop forums because I was just like a music pirate. In the same way that in the 90s I'd nerded out on like, you know, recording rap videos off Max TV and MTV. In the 2000s, I was just nerding out about downloading rap albums, you know, like trying to have like data discs with 10 albums on it. So it was just, I had everything, man. Like I was downloading just like everything from the nerdiest backpack rap, like fucking Anticon and like, you know, early Def Jux stuff to big commercial stuff like Ludacris album, you know, like I fucked with all of it. It was about it.
Cool. Do you want to talk a little bit about your new album, Hood Country Club?
I feel like I've talked about this fucking album to death already, man. I don't know, man. It's just funny because people always ask you like, oh, what do you want? I've had heaps of questions like, what do you want people to take away from the album? And so I try
reasonable question.
Yeah, no, it's a reasonable question. And I try to think of a reasonable answer. But at the end of the day, I don't fucking know. I don't know. Like,
you want people to like it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they like it. You know what I mean? I'm like, fuck, hopefully you like it and you think it's mean. But aside from what's the overarching message that I want you to take from it, I don't know. Every song is a different song, you know? And I don't want to tell people what they should feel, you know? Like, it's just like, listen to it. Hopefully you like it. And hopefully you understand where I was coming from on, even if there's an opinion you disagree with, hopefully you understand it. I do. I always find it hard to articulate things like that when we're talking about music because it's not a thought out thing in the sense of you need to take this away from it and this is the fucking point I'm trying to get across. Like I didn't approach writing the song like that. It's a feeling thing. Like I hope when people hear the music, it makes them feel good or feel sad or, you know, whatever.
Just resonates in some way.
Just resonates emotionally with whatever you were trying to.
It can be you hope it can be meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every song is not the same song. Like, I don't want you to... If it's something like probably... Fuck, I just want you to get energy from it. I hope you hear it and it fucking knocks, you know?
Yeah.
I hope you hear it and you want to fucking turn it up. That's what I want you to take from the album with that song. I hope with something like Get Off, the one with PNC, like, I hope someone hears that and they feel like, fuck, I can take on the world now, you know? Like, I hope that shit amps you up. Like, I hope that makes you feel kind of unstoppable, you know?
But you weren't thinking that when you made it. You're just making a song.
Nah, I'm making a song in that way because it makes me feel like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of the times people, they read into certain lyrics too much, you know, or they try and get something from it when it's like,
Yeah,
it's not that deep. Like certain things they think about
more than you thought about.
Yeah, they think about it more than I was thinking about it in that way. You know, like
sometimes you mean media, right? You don't mean like your average person listening to it, because it's important for someone to. Your fans listening to it, you don't want to be telling them it's not that deep, bro. Like, you know, if they take some meaning from that, let them have that.
Yeah, yeah. It is what it is. But you know, it's one of those things where certain songs are that, you know, certain songs are that deep. You know what I mean? Like something like Don't Rate That. I've said this before. Like, I'm like, I can understand why people analyze it, because it lends itself to analysis in that way.
Mm.
Yeah,
but it's also very explicit. There's not much more.
It's not. Yeah,
it's very clear.
It's literal.
It's very, very clear cut.
Fuck these guys.
With you mentioning, probably, you know, you talk about the public and the media's misconceptions about South Auckland and stuff, and you're like, probably because of that, I've got to talk up, spend about 4 months on the same verse all up. Just to make sure that there's more us. I'm sure Ben knows as well. Like, you literally did spend 4 or more months on that verse.
Well, how do we explain? Like, not that verse. It wasn't. It's not that the verse took 4 months. Just that particular verse. It was just. It's not like I started it and then it took me 4 months to finish.
No.
It was more just like...
It felt like that for me. Shit.
It was more like a... What I was more trying to say is that it might have only... like, in terms of when I actually got down to the writing of it, when it actually came, it probably only took like 2 days or something, you know, like two separate times of writing in the session. But the time it took for me to arrive at that point... was about that, because I'd written another verse. You know, I'd written a different verse and I was like, this ain't hard enough. You know, take it away. Keep the chorus. It was like that with this album.
It was a painful process, right?
Yeah, it was a more labored process in terms of just thinking about the things that I was saying on particular records. Like, I pushed myself harder, you know?
So, lyrically, you mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Because I feel like, and this is a very, I mean, layman's point of view, I suppose, so interject here, you know, borrowed time, super dark, very concentrating on the lyrics, like that's number one, and then after that you switch, like, Something Awesome, you're just more about it sounding nice, I feel, and then you start to come back to Rose Tint, you're trying to make, I feel like, good songs, but still not so much into the lyrics.
Just saying, I got no fucking bars.
I mean, you tell stories, but it's not like lyrical in like punchline type. I
just kind of go,
like,
off that shit.
Yeah, but I feel like you came back around. You started getting darker and falling into place, you know, but still wanting to make a good song. And this one, I feel like you're almost back to Borrowed Time darkness, but it's like the lyrics and the songwriting is at the same level, I feel.
Oh, there you go. Damn. You pretty much summed it up.
I mean, that's how I view it, but I don't know if... But yeah, I feel like before, like, it was out of balance, do you know what I mean? Like, the lyrics versus, like, writing a good song.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to be of the opinion the song trumps all. It doesn't matter if you got the best fucking lyrics on the planet. If the song sucks, the song sucks. And I'll always have that opinion. I'm like, the song should trump all. You drop everything for that. But in the sense of what I wanted to achieve on the verses, this is the most, it's the most effort that I really put in on just verses, you know?
Whereas, you wanted to do more with them.
Like, I just wanted to step up the verses. Almost to kind of have that sort of same thing that I had when I feel like when you start, you just... I wanted to step up the effort on the verses without it turning into just showing off to other rappers, because I'm like, I'm past that point. Do you know what I mean? It's not enough to just have a cool pattern or something, you know? It's not enough to just say a couple of clever lines but write a song about fuck all, you know? I wanted to put more effort into the verses while still retaining a theme that's cohesive with the song. Have something that actually still means something thematically.
A theme for every song.
Because the thing is, it's like, you laugh about it, but it's like so much of rap is about fuck all, you know? The thing is, like, I like a lot of rap that's kind of one of the cool things about the genre. It can be like that, you know? There's a lot of songs that are about nothing that did a choice. That's just not what I was trying to do with this record. It's not what I was trying to do with these songs. I think, like, and it's not just me. I think Jordan had a big part in, like, pushing that. He wasn't really letting shit slide on me. You know, he's just like, nah.
Was he tougher on you? Do you think?
Totally.
Definitely.
Yeah. Totally.
You saw that as well, Ben.
Yeah, man.
He was super strict on it. Both Jordan and Aaron, they're like me. We're super critical of ourselves. This is the, third, fourth record we've done? It's gotten to that where it's like, we kind of have to be because otherwise it's just repeating yourself, you know?
Because Jordan and Aaron, they've often been quite instructive with what they want you to do with certain beats and stuff as well, eh? Like, not just on this album, but previous albums. They've told you concepts or whatever before you start to writing songs.
Like, something like Southside, that's entirely Jordan's concept. Jordan pitched that idea. Like, he came with the beat and was like, yo, I reckon you should do a song. You should do a song about South Auckland. It'd be cool to get, you know, it'd be cool to get, like, Sid and Rex on it, like some other prominent South Auckland rappers. And he was just like, just try and do, like, a real honest song about South Auckland over this beat. He's like, maybe try and do the pattern like this. And I was like, cool.
Yep.
I got it straight away. That's the way production should be, you know?
Well, yeah, and he knows how you work. Yeah. He knows what you can do.
Knows what
track,
I can do.
So
knows when
to formulate it before you.
Knows when to push in. They're super strict on it.
So they were stricter this time, you felt, on this album? They were,
I
like,
feel like, yeah.
They were tougher?
I actually feel like it gets harder every time. Prior to Falling Into Place, like stuff like the Rose Tint, that's in the beats. I'd just write the shit.
Just whatever you wanted to do.
I'd just write the shit, like demo it up. What do you guys reckon of this? Cool. Yep, sweet.
Mm.
Yep.
We'll just do some additional production and that's that, you know? Whereas with Falling Into Place, it was a lot more me and them, like actually sitting down from the jump and figuring things out, like, you know, you should try and rap over this, like maybe try and go this way. From the last album and this one, they became much more hands-on in terms of the production process, which is, it's cool. But it's always, I think the thing that people don't talk about much when it comes to like being in the studio with producers and stuff, it's a scary process. As an artist, it's tough. It's tough to... Because I think when you get given a beat and you can just go make it on your own time and write it and like record it up and then show someone, it's easier once you've sat on your idea and figured it out and recorded it yourself and then you can show it off in its kind of best form.
Yeah.
It's much harder when like it's much more scary, even if it's like because these are my boys. I've known these guys for years, but it's still scary to show someone your idea that you've only just come up with.
And you're feeling very sensitive
and
you're very
vulnerable.
Yeah, you're very sensitive and vulnerable because you're exposing something about yourself, you know? What do you think about this? Especially when you're trying to do something that you haven't done before.
Yep.
You know, I think all artists will know that, like, I'm trying to kind of step out of my comfort zone. What do you think of this one? That's a tough thing. And it's like, even with people you know super well and you're good friends with, you've still got to try and overcome that sort of hurdle.
Yeah.
And the quicker that you can get to that point, the easier the process is, you know? But all it takes is... All it takes is like a couple knockbacks of your ideas. All of a sudden, you're not so fucking confident anymore. And the music becomes harder to make again, you know? So I think even with this record, there was, you know, there's definitely times in the record where I was like, mate, I'm fucking flying now. I'm on now. And I had times making the record where I was like, man, I ain't really got shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, showed the boys, they didn't feel that one. And I didn't feel it either. It's tough because I think it's rare. It's very rare that you show something and you think it's amazing and they don't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's always the ones that you're kind of 50-50 about and then you get knocked back on it and it kind of puts you in the fucking nosedive.
But you already know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you already have an inkling like, this isn't it. Like,
you want someone to tell you the lie.
that's part of production. Sometimes you need that. Sometimes someone else can see something in it that you can't, you know, and that's part of it. Like sometimes they can see something and encourage something out of you that wasn't there.
Lots of people talk about don't flinch, but I guess that's kind of like almost don't rate that sort of sense. It almost speaks for itself. But did you want to... It's like if I think about it, I'd be like, it's a cautionary tale about toxic masculinity.
Did you read that somewhere? Did someone already say that or nah?
No, well,
you just came up with that off the
Yeah.
That's pretty tight.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah. Is that, I mean...
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Was that inspired by, like, real-life people or by the idea of...
No, it's definitely inspired by real-life people.
Yeah.
It's not just one person.
Yeah.
But it's, like, if I think about it, it's an amalgamation of, like, fucking three dudes I've known throughout my lifetime, you know? It's kind of three situations. Because I don't want to just make it about one guy and just fucking ear one of the boys out.
Sorry, Rohan.
Yeah. I don't want to ear one of the boys out.
Stop
but it is.
Punching
it's like,
the wall, G.
Yeah, it's like three people I've known, and you know, I kind of combined like different aspects of them to make that one sort of story. The first verse kind of came to me straight away, and then I was like, "This is cool. I haven't done a song like this in a long time." Like a narrative
storytelling
about storytelling yeah. thing. Because usually I find storytelling songs are like, they don't have any sort of replay value to me, you know? I'm like, oh yeah, cool story. It's almost like a rapper. There was a point, especially when I started, that was just kind of like every rap album would have their like storytelling song. Just
they'd
to
have
show
their storytelling, their girl song.
Their little, yeah, their little concept, their little concept their song yeah. to show that they could do it, you know? Yeah. Like, so I haven't written a song like that in... Like I've probably written two of those in my lifetime, you know. So, yeah, that was just where I was at. But that story felt, because it's based on real people, it was a natural thing for me. It was pretty easy. It was an easy write, that one.
The whole album ties back into that concept of Hood Country Club, but I feel like that one especially, it's like just little things in life just keeps setting certain people back.
Yeah.
You know, like. They start to get somewhere and then just something small and then they're back. You know, it's just like this cycle.
Well, that's most people though as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, and the thing I like...
This is the theme of this podcast, Life is Hard.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I like about that story, well, it's not that I like it, but I think the thing that makes the story relatable is it's like that story applies across the board. It's not even necessarily like...
A hood
a socioeconomic.
Yeah.
Like, it's like that's a male thing. Anywhere, you know, like anytime, just don't let your ego fucking don't get carried away with your ego, you know, and it's all good to ask for help when you need it.
When you talked about out of your comfort zone, is Fit in one of those songs?
No, I felt perfectly comfortable with
it.
I mean, in terms of it was something different, just because I always wanted to do like a two-step song, you know what I mean? And I guess like the chorus pattern that I wrote, that's different. Like, it was very different. And I was like, I thought it was cool, but I wasn't sure if anyone else was going to think it was cool. When I did that in the studio with Jordan was straight away was just like, yeah, bro, that's pretty me. He's like, keep going with that. And that's, you know, because Jordan didn't produce, that's not Jordan's beat or anything, but when he was like, yo, he's like, that's a go. Fucking do that again. I was like, cool. Because I was comfortable with it. Like, I really liked what I'd done with it. But I still wasn't sure if anyone else would get it, you know.
Do you feel like people have gotten it?
I think the stuff that I've seen from a writer's perspective about it, no, definitely not. Like, I feel like they read into the lyrics more than I intended it to
be. They wanted it to be deep.
Yeah, but it's
because
not that
it,
deep.
Because it followed Don't Write That, I feel.
Yeah, but it's not like that. Sometimes, like, I step back on stuff like that and I'm like, oh, maybe... Am I too negative a person or something? When I see the way people talk. To me, I'm like, the concept in it is quite light. Like, it's a lighthearted one. Just like, fuck, I'm off all that. I just do me. That's really it.
But people are catching feelings and shit about it.
Yeah. Like, I've seen people say stuff. Like, I remember I talked to Dan Oaks about it. Not to single out Dan. But he was just like, bro. He was like, bro, who'd fit in? And he's like, I just wondered, like, man, am I the sort of person that you're talking about that you're not trying to fit in with me? Like, I was like, shit, it's not even. Yeah, I definitely didn't intend it in that way. Like,
and never once did you think of Dan Oaks when you were writing that song.
No, no.
Sorry, Dan,
you're good, bro. It definitely wasn't no shots like that. Like, it's more just like even the lines in it, they're more. It's just bars. It's kind of like little,
little
punchline-y type things.
More like Kanye type. Funny lines or whatever.
Yeah, well, to me, they are. Like, I'm like, the shit about, like,
that's what that's
being at the Drake concert
intended.
With a top knot and shit. Like, I'm like, that's
meant
I was
to
just
be
being
humorous.
Lighthearted. Yeah, you know? Like, it's just
But bars. People who were at the Drake concert with top knots, they were not. They didn't find the joke in that. Yeah,
they're very upset.
Oh, well, it's one of those.
There's
ones.
A top knot support group started on Facebook.
Well, it's like if 6 months before that you were saying Drake is a soft cock and you were there with a top knot, then fuck if the shoe fits, mate.
Here we go.
Some of us have been fans since So Far Gone, mate. It wasn't that deep with the lyrics on that one. Like, it was just. That was just buzz. I just wanted to rap.
Everyone talks about the 4-year gap.
Yep.
What kind of extra pressure do you think just that time does to you?
What kind of extra pressure?
How does that play on you mentally?
Yeah, it's not so much the time that was putting pressure on me. It was, it's myself. Like, I'm like, shit, I need to make something awesome. Not even that you're trying to make something super. You're not trying to make the next level shit. You're just trying to make something unique and different to what you did on the last record, because it's super important to do that. But I don't know what people are expecting from me. You know what I mean? I don't know what sound they want. I can only give the sort of sound that I want to give at that time.
Mm.
But the thing is, when there's been a long break, if the sound that you've done isn't the sound that they were wanting, then it's almost like people are more offended by it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? People are like, fuck, 4 years counting, you give me this is fucking bullshit, you know what I mean. Like, whereas if you're releasing music every sort of month or something, people aren't so fussed, because they're like, oh well, he'll have a new song next month and it'll be sweet, you know. So there's definitely the weight of people's own expectations. I didn't really think about that so much until it was time to start releasing music, you know, until I started putting stuff out.
Was that something you realized after you released it? That's not something you really considered?
Yeah, I didn't consider that sort of thought process until I put the record out, until I started putting stuff out. I'm like, oh, some people are going to catch feelings about certain things. You know, some people are going to be like, oh, this isn't what I wanted from you. I didn't think about that so much. But you can't, because if you do, you're going to start, I don't know, rehashing yourself, or you're just not going to give an honest representation of where you're at. I didn't really answer that one right. I can't. It's kind of hard to answer.
Well, just having it, I feel like, for the majority of that 4 years, the record was pretty much done.
Yeah.
You know?
There were a lot of first verses done.
Yeah. So
you're sitting with a piece of work.
Yeah, that's the sort of stuff that people don't get.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you're waiting. I had a good chunk of that record at the end of 2015, like when we put Don't Rate That.
And are you feeling like, fuck, these songs are getting old? Like, did you start doubting anything or anything?
Nah, because
like
I mean, like, I was still like, these are good songs. Like, I know that they're not fucking, you know, the ones that have made it to the record. I'm like, I know that they're not dated or whatever. But you start to be like, fuck. You know, I was super worried about someone coming out with like some other rapper like coming out with like two-step sounds and shit before that. You know,
yeah.
And I still think like, fuck, if people had heard Fit In when I made Fit In, like, the sound was more, you know?
When Craig David did his comeback.
Because it was before Craig David had done his comeback. When I actually came up with the song.
Yeah.
Things like that, you know, I think about the record coming like directly after Don't Rate That, because so much of the record was done then. And
that had quite a big impact.
Yeah.
That song.
Well, it's just like, I think the time frame between Don't Rate That and then the next thing, people are expecting something else like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of sets their expectation, like, oh, it's going to be like this.
And then it's completely
different. You know, I come with a completely different song. Whereas if it was
quicker.
If it was quick, you don't get that so much. I think people kind of design what they're thinking yet.
Cool. All right. We've got to go.
We have to go. We got to go to a comedy show. So I guess we have to wrap it up.
Well, that's us then. This Snacks and Chat's usually just that hard out about one thing, like,
Have you not fucking listened to Snacks and Chats before?
Yeah, I have.
Come on, man.
I'm trying to think. No one else's one was just like about, well, no one else done an album, but yeah.
Okay, bye.